Welcome to All the Best. I'm Merin Winchester. Love is one of those powerful human emotions, universal and timeless. And no matter how many poems, plays, songs, or great works are written about it, it still remains a bit of a mystery. This episode, we share two stories about love and relationships. Our first story is brought to you by Kate Montague. This is the story of a young couple falling in love and the build-up to that perfect proposal. This is Lovesick.
My name's Toby and I met my partner Dan back in 2004 or 5.
I was walking down a street and a girl was driving past in a car and our eyes met.
He seemed to almost, it sounds strange, but have an aura about him that I found very attractive. He also looked like he was in need of a lift, but I did think that was slightly insane, so I kept driving.
And she kept driving, and I was back in my own head again.
But then I did actually hear a voice, and this is where it gets a bit supernatural. I'd never heard a voice before. And the voice was as clear as someone sitting next to me. And it said, if you don't stop and pick this guy up, you'll regret it.
And that car got to a roundabout and suddenly did a U-turn.
It was almost like I wasn't in full control of the situation.
This girl pulls up. She's got very wild hair is what I noticed first. Big smile, very open smile. And she pulls up and throws open the passenger door.
I was nervous, but it was a real cocktail of nerves and a kind of mania, I think. I was absolutely high as a kite because I knew how significant this person was.
And before I knew what was happening, she's asking if I wanted to jump in and could she give me a lift. And I thought, bugger it, this is a chance to break the rules. So I gladly accepted. It was just one of those moments where kind of life rules collapsed or opened, or there was a blip, or there was a moment where things could happen.
It was probably less than 5 minutes. And in that time, we established that we actually had a mutual friend who he was studying with.
Toby rang that friend quite soon after our meeting.
And I can almost remember this word for word. I said, I've met this guy. His name's Dan. I don't know his surname. He's fantastic. I think I could be in a relationship with him is what I said, which is insane. It's kind of nuts. I could have just said, I think he's cute. You know, what's his number?
The fact that Toby and I had just had this little interaction that was so unique, I suppose, felt quite promising. Apart from our meeting and starting that relationship, which seemed quite quick, getting engaged was a longer process. To be honest, it was really Toby taking the lead for many years, trying to kind of encourage me.
I felt confident that I wanted to formalize what we had already. So I started leaving notes on our shopping list.
And I'd get down past the yogurt and toilet paper and cauliflower and there would be engagement ring, you know, in the same sort of scrawled text.
And sometimes I would just do a cute little sketch with the sparkles showing with the lines coming off, radiating off this big rock. Not that I wanted a diamond ring, it's just a symbol for engagement.
It was playful, but I think it was quite serious as well. I think she really wanted to do something more.
For a long time, I would also propose to Daniel, and I would always do it when it felt right for me to ask him. You know, a beautiful moment in your relationship, you might be going for a walk or you've seen a beautiful film or been out for dinner and you're just feeling right together. And then I would say, will you marry me? And he would say, I can't just say yes to that. I want to see you putting in more effort.
I maybe didn't take it as a grave kind of proposal from her. It was more just a very kind of playful. We were still both young.
So that was my way of expressing my love and telling him I wanted to marry him, was just to say it when it felt right. But for him, as it turned out, it needed to be formalized and quite beautiful and theatrical.
My strategy was to take Toby totally by surprise. I played it quite cool, but secretly was planning a way that I could propose to her.
I had no idea of the planning that Daniel had been doing, apart from receiving a package at our door.
I'd ordered a large box full of these waterproof LED lights. And they arrived from the States, and I had to quite quickly hide them somewhere in the apartment so the game wouldn't be discovered.
And maybe it said this on the parcel, perhaps they specialised in underwater LEDs. And I thought, why would Daniel be getting those? It must be a proposal.
The whole thing had to be really casual in order for the surprise to sort of come off. So I caught the bus down to the bay, had been down there recently to check where the sun is at that particular time of day to make sure the effect would be heightened.
And he said to me, meet me at Gordon's Bay, which is the beach further south from us. And I thought, well, that's unusual. And I knew that he'd received these underwater LEDs. And I put two and two together and I thought, this Thursday evening, he's going to propose to me. And I thought, this just feels really odd.
I decided to create a star constellation out of these little LEDs. Had a bottle of champagne and some ice, and I set that up in a rock pool.
He looked so vulnerable with the little lights illuminating the rock pool and the champagne, and my heart felt heavy. It was like a block of concrete, and I didn't want to hurt him. And I remember thinking, this isn't right. For me, this moment isn't right.
So when I did show her the lights and then pull out this little star map and hand it to her and...
And he joined the stars so that it said, marry me, in the stars, as if to say our love is meant to be and it's in the stars. And we hugged and he was waiting. He was looking at my face in anticipation. And I said, I'm really sorry. I said to him, I'm not saying no. I just can't say yes.
You go out on a limb like that, where even though it's someone you know so well, it really is very exposing to say, would you spend the rest of your life with me? And when someone doesn't necessarily say no, but certainly doesn't say yes, I needed to know what was going on.
And he said, well, will you come to the restaurant with me anyway? And I said, no, I really can't. I'm so sorry.
I had a limousine driver waiting in a car just above the rocks. I had booked a boutique hotel for the night as well.
And then I walked home and he was left and he had to go and tell the cab driver that it wouldn't be needed.
I think I was pretty dazed and eventually did come back to the apartment. And at that stage I was certainly a bit of a wreck. I was sobbing uncontrollably, and I remember just collapsing on a bench outdoor on the balcony.
He was so upset. To see my partner bereft like that was horrible. And he just wept. He went onto our balcony and he wept and wept and wept. It was completely heartbreaking.
And it wasn't just an emotional thing. It quite quickly became quite a physiological thing where my body just was sapped of all energy from that emotional kind of disappointment.
Very quickly the next day, it was obvious to me that he was also unwell. It wasn't just an emotional breakdown, but he was experiencing physical symptoms that were really uncomfortable for him.
I started to develop what was strangely a pain in my spine. Every step I took would lead to a sharp shooting pain, and this headache that I had kind of didn't fade at all. It really just was set in.
So he would call out while he was walking in pain and was unable to bend his knees, and it was horrifying. It's like his whole body became stiff with age all of a sudden.
And we went to the local GP. She said, well, I hate to say it, but I think you've got some sort of meningitis. And I can't tell you if it's viral or bacterial. If it's bacterial, it's really serious and you've got to get yourself to emergency because you can be dead in a matter of, you know, 48 hours. So here I was with my not bride-to-be, and she drove me off to emergency.
The staff in the emergency were talking to us as though it was a very serious condition.
After many, many hours in the waiting room, which is standard fare in emergency, they did all agree that I had viral meningitis, which is the inflammation of the membrane around the brain and around the spinal cord.
Daniel was bad, but he wasn't bad enough to justify doing a procedure called a lumbar puncture, which is when they take fluid from your spinal cord and test that for the virus.
They were discouraging me strongly from doing the spinal tap because it can lead to other complications such as infections and, I mean, gosh, you know, they actually do take a big drill and drill in from your back into the spinal column, and they suck out some of those fluids to take them to the lab to analyze whether there is a virus in your nervous system or not. We opted not to go with a spinal tap, and I did come home.
When we came home from hospital, I became Daniel's primary carer, and I cared for him for close to a week. And we just shut ourselves away from the world. It was as though we had to put all of the emotional trauma to the side. And in that time, I also did a lot of soul searching. I went for long walks and I tried to piece together whether or not I wanted to marry Daniel.
I think Toby was really keeping her distance. She was certainly looking after me, but was not engaging in any meaningful kind of discussions or interaction at the time. It was really just a nursing role without wanting to bring to the fore that complicated, awkward problem that we had before us.
It really felt like all or nothing. And I decided that I did actually want to marry him. And I took some of those LED, underwater LED candles that Daniel had used at the proposal.
She had taken those lights, switched them all on that same balcony and written, you know, three large letters, YES. And she had a very gentle smile on her face where she almost wasn't expecting me to accept it.
And I remember when I told him and he wept. And within 24 hours, he had recovered from viral meningitis.
It wasn't a sense of relief. It wasn't a sense of joy. It was more just acknowledgement that the story kicks on.
It's a story of trauma, but it's also a story of love, because Daniel's true diagnosis was a broken heart. But no one asked that question. They weren't looking for an emotional reason for his disharmony in his body.
After what I went through, I really do understand how real our emotional lives are and the effect they have on us physically and physiologically. And yes, it was frightening.
It was like we'd been marooned, each of us on our own little desert island for 2 weeks, and finally we could be together again. And that was us. That felt right.
That was Lovesick, produced by Kate Montague, and what an amazing story. That story was originally featured as part of the New York-based publication Narratively. We'll also put up a link to Narratively on our website so you can check that out. You're listening to All the Best with Maren Winchester. Love is a pretty powerful thing which can affect every part of you, body, mind, and spirit. This next piece is a beautiful composition by Tom Hogan and Eleanor Jackson. It's called The Face of the One You Love, and we'll be playing Side A. It was featured as an installation on tape decks and vinyls, and it had showings at the Queensland Poetry Festival and the Brisbane Fringe Festival. It's a meditation on death and love.
Conjure up the face of the one you love. Although you have had many loves, many lovers, many faces you could summon now, there really is only one. One open, waiting mouth, the lips light and beckoning, their face that lies against your pillows, their skin luminescent against the crumpled cotton of your bedlam. One set of features that comes now into your mind now, when I ask you to conjure up the face of the one you love. The face of the one you love now. Lay them down. Against the bed, against the floor, against the still cold of some table, and see them, faintly anticipating those moments that are endlessly before what is coming. Look at them now. The face you have never quite seen before. There is a moment where the skin and the bone is unaccustomed to your gaze. But then your face and their face make mirrors, multipliers, duplicity, amplification, the mouth you will kiss, the eyes you will bathe in, the flush cheek you will cradle in your palms, the new febrile neck you didn't know, but you love as much as an echo. And then kiss them. Place your palm against the rising falling of their chest. Feel the flex of their sternum to you. See their eyes taking in your eyes, your cheek, your nose, your lips, the open sickle of your mouth, your teeth. The mobility of your tongue, the beating double drum of your heart, the pump arterial, the river throb at the throat, the fingernails growing, the unnameable spill of hair, the aspirated reassurance of the seeming ceaseless breath, all of which you have now under your palm. Then kiss them. Make with your mouth an ocean, a night at the ocean, the soft, salty lick of your tongue intaking the slight sour of their evening breath. The mango memory of what they ate before, slippery on their pant breath. The liquid tectonic hunger, the movement intractable. The ceaseless breath, the obdurate glistening of your kisses visible upon their mouth, their throat, the apex of their forehead, and press down against that chest, against the resolve of their breathing. Undress them. Slowly or quickly, with rends or with tears, spectator or sergeant, you know it won't matter. If you need help, ask them. Undress them, or don't. You only need to be naked enough for the task at hand. Take a moment then to ask the question, what do you want? Knowing that they will want what you will want, combine against the hot skin, the moving bone, the beating body, and you will open up to them, or they will open up to you, the split of your flesh or the splint of your bone, the tongue against the nipple, the teeth against chest, the clawed hand to belly to back, the fingers kneading every vertebral notch until it finds the fuse of the sacrum, the holy bone. Touch it so slowly and with care. Open up and find the heart, the lungs, the liver, the pancreas, the spleen, the stomach, the soul, all of which lives where instinct begins. Don't waste your love. Fill them up. Memories, mementos, whispers and moans, aspiration, respiration, whispers and moans, melancholy memory, whispers and moans, a handful of hair, a scrap from their clothes, a feather falling, the echo in a shell, whispers and moans, lean to their ear, make the moan which is heard in the ear and whispered in the seam of skin where their thigh meets the heat of the pubis, the soured breath of their sweat, the bitterness and smell of places where instinct begins. Consecrate them with your quiet, like the ocean's uproar. Lie yourself back to them. Let them lead with their body and their breath and their tongue. Let them outstretch your hand and then bite down on the fingers, solving the crescent of teeth against flesh with tongue kneading down to the tender of tendon. Let them lie back to you. Be the hips and the ribs and the skin and the flesh together, the meaty slipper sheet of your love reunited with itself. Bodies weighted down by the load of all memory, palm to chest, to throat to thorax. Have them hover on the moment of telling you they love you, teeter on the precipice of telling them the same. No one need make spoken what is already body known. The night goes ever later, and your skin's half dressed or undressed or never dressed, or now newborn naked, make a strange humming howling and a soft whining singing, a tuneless unnameable song in the head, and you know that your eyes will be the last open to them. The one you love now, the last open eyes to the unskinned night. Build a drumming with your hand or a line with your hips. Move in time, find ambition in only this moment where you want what they want and they want what you want. And when it is time, someone will open their mouth with a gasp. Not too much. There will be a flex from the sternum to the sacrum. Some will push, wet beside you. Some will pull, creaking in their bones. Some will merely watch and adore. There is a grey light coming in from the dawning, the coming of morning. When it is time, someone will open their throat, drunk with spirit or memory or delight, some kind of joyful sound just waiting for the light. Just enough, not too much. There are some that still know how. And with wet, trembling fingers, light the match that will burn twice. Light your love. One open, waiting mouth. Make mirrors, multipliers, duplicity, amplification, the pump arterial, the soft, salty lick of your tongue, the liquid tectonic hunger, your thumb hooked to the corner crease of their lips, the obdurate glistening of your kisses, your kiss against the resolve of their breathing, the hot skin, the moving bone, the beating body, the split of your flesh or the splint of your bone, the fingers kneading until it finds the fuse of the sacrum. Touch it so slowly and with care. Open up. Where your instinct begins, find the heart, whispers and moans, a handful of hair, the seam of skin where their thigh meets, the bittersweet smell of those places. Drumming with your hand, a flex from the sternum to sacrum, with wet, trembling fingers, light the match that will burn twice.
The Face of the One You Love was written, composed, and produced by poet Eleanor Jackson and sound artist Tom Hogan. You've just heard side A, but there's also a side B, which is about death and the death of love. We'll put all the details on our website. You won't want to miss it. We hope you've enjoyed this episode and you're feeling a little loved up. Thank you to Kate Montague, Tom Hogan, and Eleanor Jackson for sharing their stories. All the Best is produced at FBI Radio in Sydney in association with SYN in Melbourne and 4ZZZ in Brisbane. All the Best is played across Australia on the Community Radio Network and is made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. Our production manager is Carly-Anne Keneally. Our executive producers are Jordana Caputo and Belinda Lopez. And I'm Meryn Winchester, the Features Executive Producer. Catch us next week for more homegrown stories from around Australia. Making eyes at the moon on the 31st of December, you know, to yourself would be futile. 'Cause you like when the asphalt tickles your nose, and you were studying the night like a thousand of words that keep you eternal life. You are petitioning the night. Yeah.